This is my third time being here. And of course, Memorial Day, people that have any sense would be out barbecuing, but some of us still go to church. But as I sat here, I thought about the magnificence of this country because we are immigrants. It is a country made of people from different places, different cultures, and we have made it work, and it is important. I also, as I looked at the Mandarin and other language, remembered that my first year at Georgia, at George Washington, I flunked out. And I got that letter saying, we would be happy never to see you again, that came in the mail. And then I found that I could appeal. I was a kid from Southeast Georgia, and I was also a learning disabled child, but I thought I would appeal. And I went to the Dean's Council and found out I was the only 19-year-old there without his parents. And I went in and sat with this group and told them why I thought I had flunked out. I basically lied to them. I said, you know, I'd never lived in a city, and I've just been so fascinated with Washington, and I also work at the Senate office building, and I just have not studied. So they sent me out, and I came back in, and they said, if you can make a C in Spanish this summer, we will reconsider letting you return in the fall. Well, my Spanish professor was a lawyer who had been driven out of Spain by the Civil War, and he was teaching Spanish, and I knew I had to go see this man and say to him, I really want to do well. And so I went, and he looked at me and he said, Mr. Russell, you don't even speak English. How do you think you can speak Spanish? He could not understand my accent, but I did make a B. But thank you. Today, I wanted to use the passage from Isaiah. It's often used in ordinations of ministers, but then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? And I said, here am I. Send me. Now some of you know that the English had a royal wedding last week, and the presiding bishop of the American Episcopal Church delivered a very powerful but a very long sermon seen by 4 billion people. Many people said he should never have spoken about politics. But he was doing exactly what an ordained person of the Reformation is required to do. Anglicans, and here Episcopalians, are part of the Reformation. In old political terms, they are on the right, and the Baptists are on the left. And please don't tell your Baptist friends they're leftist. They don't do well with that. And we Presbyterians sit somewhere in the middle. But we have a history of insisting that we are not only transforming how we understand God's call to us religiously, but we are transformers of society. You've heard it from the pulpit again and again. We're responsible for the poor, not just in food pantries, but in political discussion and action. And I can tell you that I cringe almost daily when I realize that in one of the richest nations of the world, we have children that go to bed hungry. We also know that Jesus turned the society upside down. Women were as important as men, according to Jesus. The stranger is our neighbor. We are agents of transformation. But my fear is always that when I say this in church, people say, well, he's a pastor, he's required to think and talk this way. So what I want to do today is to ask you, what are you doing? In Protestantism, we're the priesthood of all believers. It's not just me that needs to be talking and taking actions to transform. It's every one of us. My ministry grew up in hospitals. 15 months as a chaplain intern in a large charity hospital, then 12 months in a general hospital as a chaplain resident. One experiences the entire spectrum of life and its glory and horror in a hospital setting. I spent 40 years teaching, inviting young and old pastors, priests, and rabbis to look at how their ministry impacted other people. One thing I would say to these people, you're going to meet God in your patient. Please don't think that you're so special that you're the person taking God. The patient is there, and that is where you will find God. Now, hospitals taught me that there were folks working there who were often much more important than I in what they did. And here's the image of the priesthood of all believers. The housekeeper who made sure rooms and surgery suites were as germ-free as possible. The nurse's aide who washed patients. Let me regress for just a minute. I grew up in the 1940s and the 50s. In American society at that time, most thinking was that you would decide what you wanted to do in life, then you would do what it took to do that, and you would do that art or that skill or that work until the day you retired. The world was fixed, and people knew their places. There's a lot of safety in that, but boy, I tell you, there's a lot of boredom too. I am so happy that today we have young people who feel that they are not tied all their life to one pursuit, that they have the opportunity to think of other things, other ways to use their talents. Our St. Luke's Hospital at one time had a program where one could apply to move into a different skill that was above what they were doing at that time, and the hospital would teach them that skill. So I applied to be a neurosurgeon. One day, I go to the blood bank because I need to have some blood drawn. And here I met a person who I had seen time and time again on the food line, serving food in the cafeteria. And this woman said to me, "Chaplain, I've stuck so many oranges, but I really need to try a real vein. May I stick you?" And part of my head was going, "No, no, no." But I said, "Sure, let's do it." It hurt. She had to start. But from then on, every time I passed this person in the hall, they would tell me how much I had helped them to gain the confidence to move into a new field. St. Luke's was transforming society by enabling people to increase their skills and their income. One would call it a political decision. I'm using political from the Greek root of people, for the people, by the people, of the people. I can tell you I didn't get trained to be a neurosurgeon. So what are you doing? Hopefully, like Isaiah, you're saying, "Here am I, send me." I don't know what your skills are, and perhaps if you're younger, you don't fully know yet. But we are called to make a difference, to transform this society. And the great thing is that in this time of history, we don't have to see ourselves stuck doing one thing as we in the 40s and 50s did. For about a year, there's been a young man in our Dearburgs who bags groceries, and he's required to ask me if he may carry the groceries to the car. And I always have said to him, "In 10 years, if you're still here, I will let you bring the groceries to the car." My hope was that he might be doing something else in 10 years than bagging groceries. He did not appear to be one of the special ed students that Dearburgs so graciously and importantly hires that stay for years. So I'm waiting for Barbara to get out of her Parkinson's class at the YMCA one day, and across the hall is that young man. And I call out and say, "Hey, I know you from Dearburgs." And he was in an academic gown, and he said, "I know you too." And he kept on walking. I found out that he was at the graduation of the St. Louis County Technical School. A few days later, I ran into him gathering shopping carts in the parking lot. I congratulated him upon his graduation, and like every old person, we need to learn. I said, "What are you going to do with your degree?" And his response was, "Well, I've got time to figure that out." And I said, "Great, of course you do." Now, I doubt if this kid will ever say, "Here am I, send me," but I think that he will respond to that call, and I think you and I will probably be very pleased with his path. Amen.